Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now! Explosions rocked the live broadcast of Iranian state TV yesterday after Israel bombed station headquarters. Meanwhile, President Trump has left the G7 summit early and returned to Washington, telling Iranians everyone should leave Tehran. Then to Minnesota, where the alleged assassin of former State House Speaker has been arraigned on federal and state charges. We'll speak with Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison.
She was a powerful political leader and a good person because she understood some basic things about life in our society. She understood that everyone is entitled to due process. She understood that kids learn better on a full stomach, so she fought for universal school meals.
Then we speak to Cuba's deputy foreign minister. He just addressed the UN General Assembly yesterday. We'll talk to him about the U.S. travel ban, reported U.S. plans to send more immigrants to Guantanamo, and the U.S. embargo.
The time allotted is not enough to describe the magnitude and scope of the United States' economic war against Cuba. It is not enough to explain the way it hinders our economic policies, the efforts it demands from our authorities to guarantee the country's vitality under such aggressive pressure.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Mimi Goodman. Israel bombed the headquarters of Iranian state television Monday in the latest escalation of Israel's war on Iran. Israel also assassinated another top Iranian official, Iran's new wartime chief of staff, Ali Shadmani. The bombing of Iranian state TV occurred during a live broadcast that was cut short as the studio began to fill with dust after the blast.
What you observed, what you heard, this dust in the air.
The news anchor left her seat at the Iranian state broadcaster as the room filled with smoke. Three employees of Iranian state TV were reportedly killed. The Committee to Protect Journalists said it was appalled by the Israeli attack. The group's Middle East representative, Sara Kuda, said, quote, Israel's killing with impunity of almost 200 journalists in Gaza has emboldened it to target media elsewhere in the region, unquote. Many residents of Tehran are attempting to leave the city as Israel attacks the city for a fifth day. On Monday, three Red Crescent workers were killed while responding to an Israeli airstrike in the capital. Israel claims its, quote, full aerial operational control over Tehran. On Monday, President Trump wrote online, everyone should immediately evacuate Tehran, exclamation point. Iran is also continuing to fire missiles at Israel. On Monday, a major Israeli oil refinery in Haifa was shut down after being hit by a missile. Meanwhile, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is refusing to rule out assassinating Iran's Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. He was questioned by ABC's Jonathan Carl.
The president flatly rejected a plan, an opportunity that the Israelis had to take out the supreme leader. Do you understand his concern? My understanding is his concern is that this would escalate the conflict beyond where it is already.
It's not going to escalate the conflict. It's going to end the conflict.
On Monday, leaders of the G7, including President Trump, signed a statement calling for a, quote, de-escalation of hostilities in the Middle East, unquote, while also affirming Israel's right to defend itself, even though Israel launched the initial unprovoked attack on Iran. Trump left the G7 summit in Canada a day early. On his flight back to Washington, D.C., he told reporters he's seeking a, quote, real end to conflict, not a ceasefire. Trump said, quote, Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. It's very simple, unquote. Trump also criticized French President Emmanuel Macron, who had said Trump left the G7 to negotiate a ceasefire. Meanwhile, Reuters reports the U.S. military has moved a large number of Air Force refueling aircraft to Europe. The U.S. aircraft carrier Nimitz is also heading to the Middle East. On Monday, Democratic Senator Tim Kaine introduced a war powers resolution to require Trump seek authorization from Congress before attacking Iran. Al Jazeera reports Israeli attacks have killed at least 74 people in Gaza since dawn, including 56 Palestinians seeking humanitarian aid in Khan Yunis. Many were killed by Israeli tank fire. On Monday, another 38 aid seekers were killed, fueling growing international condemnation of the shadowy U.S.-Israel-backed aid operation. Anna Halford of Doctors Without Borders described it as, quote, neither a humanitarian enterprise nor a system. This is basically lethal chaos, she said. UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk has accused Israel of, quote, inflicting horrifying, unconscionable suffering on Palestinians, unquote. Meanwhile, French-Palestinian-European Parliament member Rima Hassan criticized her fellow lawmakers for remaining silent after she and 11 others were detained by Israel while attempting to deliver aid to Gaza as part of the Gaza Freedom Flotilla.
As long as this parliament is silent, Europe will no longer be a voice for human rights, but the echo of its own complicity and political cowardice. June 8th, I was kidnapped at sea internationally by the Israeli army while I was on board a humanitarian ship on the way to Gaza. There were 12 of us on board the ship, including 10 European citizens. All have been kidnapped, deported by Israel, and illegally detained for several days. In a deafening silence of this parliament, no condemnation. No call for unconditional release. I was handcuffed, searched naked, handcuffed hands and feet. I was put in solitary confinement for having written Free Palestine in my cell.
In news from Ukraine, a massive Russian missile and drone assault on Kyiv has killed at least 14 people and wounded over 50 more. Local officials say it was one of the largest attacks on the Ukrainian capital since Russia invaded in 2022. Authorities report 30 apartments were destroyed in a single residential block. One U.S. citizen died from shrapnel wounds. In a separate strike, a Russian attack on the port city of Odessa injured 13 more people. The assault came as the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, headed to the G7 talks in Canada. In Minnesota, federal and state officials have announced murder and stalking charges against Vance Belter, the man accused of assassinating Democratic State House leader Melissa Hortman and her husband in their home, as well as shooting State Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette. Joseph Thompson is acting U.S. Attorney for Minnesota.
Political assassinations are rare. They strike at the very core of our democracy. But the details of Belter's crime are even worse. They are truly chilling. It is no exaggeration to say that his crimes are the stuff of nightmares. Belter stalked his victims like prey. He went to their homes, held himself out as a police officer, and shot them in cold blood.
Authorities say Belter visited the homes of two other lawmakers on the night of the killings. They also discovered a hit list that included Planned Parenthood centers and the names of many Democratic politicians, including Minnesota Senators Tina Smith and Amy Klobuchar, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, and State Attorney General Keith Ellison, who will join us later on the program. On Monday, Senator Smith confronted Republican Senator Mike Lee after he blamed the political left for the shooting. In one post, the Utah senator wrote, quote, "This is what happens when Marxists don't get their way," unquote. The Department of Homeland Security has instructed immigration agents to continue raiding farms, hotels and restaurants, reversing a call by President Trump just days ago to exempt those industries. The Washington Post reports Trump advisor Stephen Miller opposed making any exceptions for specific industries, despite warnings from business leaders about the economic fallout of the raids. Meanwhile, federal agents are continuing to carry out raids in and around Los Angeles. On Saturday, dozens of armed, masked agents raided a popular flea market outside Los Angeles. In Georgia, a prominent Spanish-language journalist is facing possible deportation after being arrested while covering Saturday's No Kings protests. Mario Guevara, who was live-streaming the demonstration, was taken into custody despite clearly identifying as a journalist. Originally from El Salvador, he's built a large following for his reporting on anti-ICE protests. According to The Guardian, a municipal judge released him on bond Monday, but jail officials then said he would be transferred to ICE custody. A New York Supreme Court judge has blocked New York City Mayor Eric Adams from going ahead with his plan to allow ICE to reopen an office at the Rikers Island Jail complex. Judge Mary Rosato sided with the New York City Council in its argument that Adams likely gave ICE the green light for the Rikers Island office in exchange for Trump's Justice Department dropping its corruption case against the mayor. In Mexico, nine newly elected Supreme Court justices received their certificates of victory following Mexico's first ever judicial elections in May. The incoming head of the Supreme Court is Hugo Aguilar Ortiz, a Mixtec indigenous lawyer from Oaxaca, who becomes the first indigenous person to hold Mexico's highest judicial office. Ortiz spoke during the election certification ceremony.
Ha quedado atrás.
The days when our words, our requests, and even our mere presence were met with ridicule and discrimination in these very institutions are now behind us. Thank you for everything. The history of Mexico cannot be understood without considering the participation of indigenous and Afro-Mexican peoples at various moments of transformation. The electoral process we are now completing was no exception. I'm confident that this is the beginning of the full inclusion of indigenous and Afro-Mexican peoples in the public life of our country.
Mexico's judicial election turned out just 13% of eligible voters. It came following hotly contested reforms last year. Judges aligned with the ruling Morena party dominated the election, including the makeup of the Mexico Supreme Court. The Guardian's reporting health workers at the Department of Veterans Affairs could refuse treatment to patients who are Democrats, unmarried, or based on their national origin. Due to the VA's revised bylaws, those were changed to conform with President Trump's anti-trans executive order, according to the report. And the new guidelines also apply to hiring practices, effectively allowing for employment discrimination. The White House has denied the report. The VA is the country's largest integrated hospital system with over 26,000 doctors serving 9 million patients each year. All 50 states, Washington, D.C., and four U.S. territories have signed on to a $7.4 billion settlement with Purdue Pharma, the maker of OxyContin. The deal has reportedly also been approved by the Sackler family, owners of Purdue. If finalized, the settlement will go towards resolving thousands of victim lawsuits against Purdue. It'll also help fund addiction treatment, prevention, and recovery programs. Under the deal, the Sacklers will lose control over Purdue. The deal also does not shield the Sacklers from future opioid settlements, which they had previously fought for. Over 850,000 people have died from opioid-related overdoses in the United States since 1999. And the NAACP has announced it will not invite President Trump to its upcoming national convention in Charlotte, North Carolina. This marks the first time the organization's opted to exclude a sitting president in its 116-year history. NAACP President Derek Johnson said, quote, our mission is to advance civil rights, and the current president has made clear that his mission is to eliminate civil rights, he said. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Israel bombed the headquarters of Iranian state television Monday in the latest escalation of Israel's five-day war. Israel also assassinated another top Iranian official, Iran's wartime chief of staff, Ali Shadmani. The bombing of Iranian state TV occurred while the station was live on the air.
What you observed, what you heard, this dust in the air.
The news host who was anchoring jumped up out of her seat as smoke filled the studio. Three employees of Iranian state TV were reportedly killed in the Israeli attack. Speaking from outside the burning building with what appears to be blood on his hands, an Iranian state TV reporter described the attack.
I was on the first floor when the bombing happened. I don't know how many of my colleagues were martyred or how many were injured. They had told us to evacuate the area, but everyone stayed until the last moment to show the world the image of Iran's power, something the Zionist regime doesn't want. This is the result of their miscalculation. Did they think hitting the IRIB would achieve anything? They will see worse.
And President Trump is back in and we're going to turn to President Trump is back in Washington, D.C., after cutting short his trip to Canada for the G7 summit, citing concerns about the conflict in the Middle East. Earlier Monday, he said on social media, everyone should immediately evacuate Tehran. Late Monday night, the Group of Seven released a statement expressing support for Israel and calling Iran a source of instability, as well as calling for a broader de-escalation in the region. President Trump signed the statement after initially declining to do so. Speaking to reporters aboard Air Force One, President Trump told reporters Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon and said, quote, I'm not too much in the mood to negotiate now.
I've been negotiating. I told them to do the deal. They should have done the deal. Their cities have been blown to pieces. I've lost a lot of people. They should have done the deal. I told them, do the deal. So I don't know. I'm not too much in a mood to negotiate now.
Meanwhile, the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has refused to rule out the assassination of the Iranian supreme leader, Ali Khamenei. This is what he said on ABC, speaking to reporter Jonathan Carl.
The president flatly rejected a plan, an opportunity that the Israelis had to take out the supreme leader. Do you understand his concern? My understanding is his concern is that this would escalate the conflict beyond where it is already.
And it's not going to escalate the conflict. It's going to end the conflict.
For more, we're joined by two guests. Nagar Mordzevi is an Iranian-American journalist, host of the Iran podcast, senior fellow at the Center for International Policy, joining us from Washington, D.C. And Uri Goldberg, an Israeli political analyst and scholar who's written extensively on Iran, Israel, and the relationship between religion and politics in the Middle East. His latest op-ed for Al Jazeera is headlined, The Real Reason Israel Attacked Iran. We welcome you both to Democracy Now!, Nagar Mordzevi, I want to begin with you. You have this chilling warning from the president of the United States as he cuts short his meeting at the G7, comes back to the Situation Room in Washington, D.C., and says all should leave Tehran. We're talking about millions of people. What are you hearing on the ground as we watch the news host jump out of her seat as her studio at Iran State Television was bombed?
Amy, I can say everyone I've spoken to is in shock and horror. First of all, people didn't expect this coming from day one. And as your reporting has shown, from day one, civilians have also been the target, even though the attacks were framed as an attack on Iran's nuclear program, political, military target. That wasn't only the case in civilian homes, residences, sometimes of the commanders, but also neighbors. Entire buildings sometimes have been targeted, and the civilian toll on the Iranian side is very high and keeps rising. There's also a civilian toll on the Israeli side. I'm sure you're going to talk about that. So far, it's over 200 people killed in these attacks in Iran, and most of them civilians, 1,500 injured. So it's a horror. And also in Tehran, this directive essentially coming from President Trump, we don't know what to make of it. How can a city, a metropolis of 10 million people suddenly evacuate, and to where? I mean, this is, we're talking about women, children, the disabled, elderly, sick people. How can people just get up and go? The very few, and I would say maybe the lucky few who have homes or family or access to places outside of Tehran who have tried to leave the city in the past few days have been stuck in very, very congested traffic of roads trying to get out of the city. And gas stations have very long lines. I've spoken to someone who was trying to go to a city north of Tehran that normally takes a three-hour drive. They had to wait in a gas station for about 6 hours just to fill up a tank, and then an overnight trip of about 12 hours for a road that would normally take 3 hours. And this is before the Israeli directive for people to evacuate an entire neighborhood, and then President Trump's post that says everyone should leave Tehran. So it's going to create chaos, mayhem. I don't even know if a lot of people are taking this seriously. The government is not taking this very much seriously. They have put out some directives for people to go to metro stations or mosques or take shelter in places. But I think even the government themselves, they're in shock. And they haven't been really dealing with this in a proper way. And the country's air defenses don't seem to be able to intercept enough of the attacks coming. And the attacks also, part of it is domestic, coming from inside Iran, car bombs going off, or these sort of infiltration stations that are being discovered, where essentially Israeli agents are conducting some of these missions from inside the country. So it's absolute mayhem. It's a horror show. People are shocked, they're horrified, and they don't know what to do.
Yes, I wanted to ask you, Nagar, in the U.S. press, one word we do not hear in the commercial press is that this is an unprovoked attack of the Israeli government. We heard that often when in the aftermath of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, almost every mention was of the unprovoked invasion. To your understanding, what did Iran do to cause Israel to launch this attack?
And this is a great point you're making, both in the statement of political leaders of the West, and also that trickles down, I think, to the media coverage. You see a very clear bias and sort of a double standard or hypocrisy, if you may, on how they deal with these different situations, sort of the international rules-based order, the laws of war, and how you frame these things. So from the beginning, the Israelis were framing their attack as a preemptive attack. A preemptive attack has a meaning in international law. It means the enemy was about to imminently attack you any minute, and you discovered that, and you try to preempt that by attacking first. And the Israelis haven't produced that evidence. In fact, just today, I think, reporting was coming that U.S. intelligence is saying, no, Iran's nuclear program remains a civilian, and they did not have the plan to weaponize this. The Israelis are saying they were about to build nuclear weapons and then hit Israel for it. Yes, Iran has enough uranium-enriched fissile material to potentially build a bomb if they decide to weaponize the program. But there are so many ifs on the way, and to call that a preemptive strike on an imminent threat is just something that we haven't seen evidence for. And unfortunately, the media and the press, as you said, many legacy media are just following that line. It's a disservice to their audiences to people, you know, around the world, especially in the West, whose countries, whose tax dollars, whose government's policies are very much involved and fueling the conflict in the region.
And in following up on this issue of Israel's claim that Iran is near building a nuclear weapon, isn't there a longstanding fatwa of the Iranian clergy against Iran developing a nuclear bomb?
There's a fatwa against developing nuclear bomb by the supreme leader, who's also a religious leader. And there's also longstanding policy. And more important than that, if people don't trust the Iranian side, U.S. intelligence reporting has time and again shown that Iran's nuclear program remains civilian. And I think the irony here that we need to point out is that the Iranians have said before, senior officials, that if the homeland gets attacked and if the nuclear program gets attacked, then their decision-making and their policy may actually shift. They have signaled that publicly. So while the program remains civilian, in the long term, if they decide to make that shift into a weaponized program, we can thank these attacks, Benjamin Netanyahu, essentially, for going after a program that used to be civilian and can potentially, shift the policy in the future and weaponize it. But right now, I mean, U.S. intelligence has just reaffirmed Iranian policy publicly. And then also, as you said, that religious decree, which is an important thing as well.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth was asked about growing tensions in Iran in an interview with Fox News Monday. This is what he said.
The president's, as he said today, his position has not changed. What you're watching in real time is peace through strength and America first. Our job is to be strong. We are postured defensively in the region to be strong in pursuit of a peace deal. And we certainly hope that's what happens here. And America first means we're going to defend American personnel and American interests. So when you see jets and you see air defense assets and counter UAS assets, that's because my job as the Secretary of Defense is to ensure that our people are safe and that we're strong so that we can set the conditions for a deal. And President Trump's made it clear it's on the table. The question is whether Iran will take it.
On Monday, Iran called on President Trump to force a ceasefire. This is a reporter questioning Trump.
Have you heard any signals or seen any messages from intermediaries that Iran wishes to de-escalate the conflict?
Yeah.
What have you heard? What have you heard from the Iranians?
They'd like to talk, but they should have done that before. I had 60 days, and they had 60 days. And on the 61st day, I said, we don't have a deal. They have to make a deal, and it's painful for both parties, but I'd say Iran is not winning this war, and they should talk, and they should talk immediately before it's too late.
And what would you say, in your opinion, what would it take for the U.S. to get involved in this conflict militarily?
I don't want to talk about that.
So President Trump is back in Washington, called a meeting in the Situation Room. I want to bring Uri Goldberg into this conversation, an Israeli political analyst who's written extensively about Iran. He's speaking to us from Tel Aviv, wrote a piece in Al Jazeera headlined, "The Real Reason Israel Attacked Iran." Uri, what is that reason?
The reason, I think, is Netanyahu's desperate attempt, last chance attempt, if you will, to draw the world's attention away from Gaza. Real reason Israel attacked Iran is that Israel has reached the end of its rope and has exhausted all of its options in Gaza. Israel cannot make any sort of progress in Gaza. It keeps on killing Palestinians regularly, which is the only thing that it is at its disposal. And I think Netanyahu felt the global sentiment shifting on Gaza. I think he saw the potential reversal of his fortunes with regard to what Israel was doing in the Gaza Strip. And because of that, he attacked Iran. To continue Ms. Mortazavi's point, the notion that this was a preemptive strike is ridiculous. Obviously, this has been planned for long months, perhaps even years, and this was carried out precisely at the right moment that was deemed fortuitous for reasons of political timing. It seems that there is no serious intelligence outfit in the world and that includes both the American DNI and Israeli Mossad, that assessed Iran's nuclear situation as an imminent threat. That, I think, only stresses this point further. Netanyahu did not go to war with Iran because he sensed a window of opportunity to decrease the threat to Israel. Netanyahu went to war with Iran because of Gaza.
Ari Goldberg, would you say it's fair to say that the imminent threat was not Iran developing a nuclear bomb, which, of course, Israel has, but Iran and the U.S. were perhaps about to negotiate this nuclear deal, very similar to the one President Obama negotiated?